Hello and welcome to Untold, the podcast that goes behind the scenes interviewing founders and business leaders about their untold journeys. We go further than botched up deliveries. It's tough out there and we want to tell the hardships that go with it and the effects this can have on guests' mental health. Key insights and tangible takeaways to help you, our listeners, continue on your journey. I'm Harry Turpin, founder of The Savers, and I'm also your host. Let's do it. As always, keep dribbling.
Give a big cheer and we can all sort of say, yeah, on the live podcast. There we go. We're trying. We're getting the energy back. Okay, cool. So, welcome to Untold. For those of you that don't know Untold Podcast, we attempt to go behind the scenes in food and drink to speak about some of the slightly tougher moments. And what we try and do is focus on the founders and their kind of personal journeys. I've got three fantastic founders of various different experiences with me today. And I'm super excited to kind of get stuck in. So I'll introduce straight away. So we've got Dan on my left here from currently at Grenade Drinks, but he will take you through his amazing career. My first gig in food and drink was working for Cause and Press, and Dan was my boss. So it's quite a funny kind of full circle moment here. And I remember one of the first things you ever said to me was, I think it was I started in January in field sales, and you gave me a rucksack and a load of cans. We were launching the Rhubarb Revolution for Cause and Press at the time. And you gave me a rucksack and you said, and I looked outside and I was like, oh, it's January, it's really cold and wet. And I'm gonna be walking the streets of London. And you said, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing. And that stuck with me for so many years. And in the middle here, we have Lucy, who's obviously co-founder of Nice Drink. She's been on an amazing journey herself. And on the end, we've got Deepak, who's founder of Oddbox. Dan, if I can start with you, can you kind of introduce yourself and give us a quick sort of couple of minutes on your career so far?
Yeah, sure. Hopefully you can hear me. Is that working? Yeah, it's coming. Nice to see you all. I've been in the industry just over 20 years now, and started at Pete and Johnny Smoothies, which some people might not know, but they created the smoothie market. And I drove a van with a big bottle on top around London selling smoothies. When people said, oh, I can't drink that, I'm driving. They didn't know what was in it. And then I went into Green and Black's Chocolate and was part of the team that put that on the map before its exit to Cadbury. Went and did my time really hard in Cadbury to learn the blue chip background before being headhunted to come out and do Coulson Press. So I spearheaded Coulson Press and built that business up to about 20 million at retail sales, and we launched into 14 countries around the world. Following that, I went into Dalston Soda, which is a tiny little startup, handmade craft soda in East London, and was responsible for sort of co-founding a new business out of that called Dalston's Soda, and it was all about going in and doing what craft beer have done in craft soda. And then at the moment, I've come into Grenade, which is an absolutely rip-roaring success, which has had an exit to Mondelez for 200 million. And it's now the best-selling protein bar in the UK, but also in the last 12 weeks, the Oreo Grenade bar is the best-selling chocolate single in the UK. So bigger selling than Twirl, Snickers, and the like. So yeah, really kind of interesting career path, and love food and drink.
Amazing. And Lucy, if you come to you, if you guys don't know Nice Drinks, and you've been living under a rock for the last couple of years. But yeah, come to you.
Tough gig to follow, Dan, but okay. So I'm Lucy. I've been in the food industry for, I think it's coming up to about 11 years now. Fresh out of university with absolutely no experience. I didn't even know what the word FMCG meant. I launched a breakfast brand called Cuckoo, which made on-the-go chilled Berkshire Muesli pots, and we managed to gain distribution in the likes of Tesco, Waitrose, Sainsbury's. Had a really amazing 4 years doing it. Lots of highs, lots of lows. I personally wouldn't choose to launch a chilled product with a short shelf life again. After 4 years of running that business, I exited and sold it, which sounds a lot more glamorous than it was. And then I jumped into consulting, helping food and drink brands build their sales strategy, route to market strategy, really everything and anything around sales, which is definitely what I was born to do. I worked with brands like Ollie's Olives, Doisy and Dam, Olivia's Kitchen. During that time, I met Jeremy, my now co-founder, who was leaving Propercorn, now Proper, having built their international business. Him and I met, and on the third time of meeting, I said, I don't want to be a consultant forever. Would you like to launch a food or drink brand with me? And he said yes. We then decided to go to America and see what was going on over there with the trends, but we didn't get that far because I was mindlessly scrolling through Instagram and I spotted a wine in a can and immediately knew that that was the product I needed to bring to the UK market. So him and I then went for it and we launched Nice, which is a future wine company. We started with just cans and we're the fastest growing and largest canned wine brand in the UK. We supply customers like Sainsbury's, Virgin Atlantic, Ocado, but we've now added to our range and we sell wine in boxes and wine on tap. We're based in London. We've got an amazing team of 13 people, some of them in the audience there, shout out. And it really feels like the wine category is very ripe for disruption. It hasn't really changed in a very long time, and we're really just at the beginning of our journey in doing that.
Amazing. And Deepak, if we come to you.
The joys of starting third. It's too hard acts to follow, right? I've had no experience in food and beverage before starting Oddbox. I was working in banking, completely on the verge of burning out, you could say, but completely frustrated, working in a capitalistic enterprise. Started Oddbox with my wife and now CEO, Emily, about 7 years ago now. And we started Oddbox because we saw there was a huge food waste that was happening at the farm level, but also at a supply chain level. So we started, packing our boxes ourselves and delivering our boxes ourselves. And then the whole purpose of Oddbox is to fight food waste at the farm level, but also at the supply chain level. And at the farm level, we fight food waste with our subscription veg boxes that we deliver to over 60,000 customers across the country. And then more recently, we've launched our own branded, Oddbox-branded retail products. So things like Oddbox-branded apple juice, Oddbox-branded cooking paste, and more to follow in order to make the most of the gluts and flushes that our growers grow through. And then more recently, we've started looking at food waste in the supply chain as well. So we work with some amazing food brands who've got surplus in their supply chain. That could be because of short date, because of misprinted packs and so on. And we work with like-minded B Corps and people who share our values. And we've started adding that to our boxes as well. So yeah, that's kind of a summary, I suppose. Yeah.
So it's an amazing journey, and I think I feel very privileged to be with all three of you because you've all inspired me personally, and I'm sure the audience feels the same. I want to get under the skin. I want to make sure that we keep on sort of untold topics. So I want to come to Lucy and Deepak first. Lucy, if we come to you first. You guys are obviously incredibly well-versed now in terms of sort of rapidly scaling businesses. I mean, the growth in both of what you've built and seen over the last couple of years is astronomical. I want to get under the skin of how you as a founder and you as a person cope with that, because from the outside in, it's like, whoa, this is amazing, and there's like pink jumpsuits and amazing sort of boxes flying around everywhere. Deepak, I know we spoke before about like that during lockdown, like you'll come on to what the exact stats were, but it sort of blew my mind. How do you as people deal with that? How do you cope with that? Do you sort of just take it in your stride, or what talk us through that kind of process, that journey?
Yeah, should I go first?
Yeah, Lucy, if you go first.
I mean, big question, but I'll try and pick out a few bits that I think will be useful for the audience, because there's a lot of different sort of routes I could go down. So for me, I think it's a few things. I'll just pick sort of a handful of them. So number one, it is having an incredible co-founder. I really admire people that set up businesses by themselves, and I don't know how anyone does that, because you have extreme highs and then you also have extreme lows. And I'm very lucky with Jeremy. We really didn't know each other when we went into business with each other, but we have really got to know each other, and we're a real sort of power couple. We're not only great friends, but we've got full trust in each other, and we can really lean on each other when one of us is having a more low moment, and that definitely happens. And I have in the past been to Jeremy when I'm not feeling so great about things, and through talking to him, I have then come away from that feeling much better. So having him to always rely on. And then secondly, we have a fantastic chairman, a guy called Shalem Patel, who's a bit of a guru in the alcohol world. And again, just having him individually to be able to go to, or to go to with Jeremy and work through challenges and problems, is really instrumental. And then thirdly, I have a really awesome husband. I've become a new mum, and I've had a baby 13 weeks ago, and that's been a real journey for me. and having an amazing husband to support me through that. He is very much taking the reins in our relationship to be the sort of more hands-on parent, because I've got my baby with Nice as well as a real-life baby. So having someone that I can just go home to and just really talk to has been amazing for me. And he is a lot more calm than me and doesn't panic so much. So I always feel a lot better from talking to him.
Amazing. Love it. I think there's a key theme in a lot of guests that we have on, that kind of just getting it out, be it through journaling, be it through speaking to people, be it through kind of sharing those experiences, really help. And Deepak, I want to come to you. I know we spoke on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and you spoke about a time during lockdown where that unbelievable growth period came from. Talk us through that journey.
Yeah, so I think from the beginning of Oddbox, 2016, when we started, we've always had triple-digit growth year on year on year. And it came to a bit of a head in lockdown where we were literally seeing from 1 week to another 10 times in terms of daily order volume. And this is humongous because we were doing something like 8,000 boxes a week at that point in time. And we were literally seeing that grow up to 9,000. And then by June that year, we were doing 50,000 boxes a week. And you can imagine the stress on the supply chain and the team and all of the other moving parts trying to keep this, offer a great, you know, customer experience and not compromise on our values. And I think that was, in a way, really stressful, just because to kind of get the supply chain kind of firing on all cylinders. But what was more stressful was last year, for the first time, we've always had triple-digit growth, and we literally hit single-digit growth. And the amount of so we had to go through our first ever round of redundancies, let people go, and that is one of the single most stressful moments of my life, letting people go, families, mortgages, and holidays, and so on and so forth. And at the peak of our D2C, we had investors investing, and if you've dealt with investors who invest at the peak, and who see their investment going down, they start applying pressure, right, in various ways. And it came to a point where I remember this conversation with one of the people in the board, where this was last year, where she was literally, there was a question, I think you should be looking at a career outside Oddbox. And this, and I haven't disclosed this to many people, this for me was, I mean, this business was started by me and my wife. And for 3 years, this we poured blood, sweat, and tears. No salary, no holidays. You all know this. Some of you have started your own business. But then to be having been told by our investors and the board, you might have to look elsewhere, was one of the most stressful moments of my life.
Hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Untold Podcast is brought to you by The Savorists. We're here to keep you jiggling at snack time. We have a range of mega flavor, loaded ingredient, real nutritious snacks. They taste absolutely banging. And we have a brand new range of crunchets, which are made from black beans, edamame beans, puffed rice, seasoned with a Thai chili and a sizzling barbecue. Yes, I promise you, they are as delicious as they sound. Thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the episode and check us out, savorists.com. Ta-da!
It's quite personal as well to kind of go through that. So I think at that point, I was also kind of getting disengaged with the business and getting to a point where I was going, maybe I need to look out, you know, maybe I need to go back to a salary job. And I think at that point in time, just coming back to the coping strategies, a long-winded story, I knew that I had to manage myself in order to kind of and be more resilient, because these things were just, you know, just part and parcel of running a business, right? I mean, you just have to go through these, you know, ups and downs. Business goes through cycles. So I decided I'll get on a routine, which is where I read kind of life-transforming book. I'd read this many years before. It's classic, and I reread it again on holiday, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And it talks about, and this might seem like it's a kind of old classic book, but one of the things that Stephen Covey, the point he makes, is we all have different roles in our life. And that could be as an entrepreneur, as a father, as a son, as a husband, as a, you know, brother, and so on. And I think if you're work-centered and you build your self-worth because with work, you can connect, have strong connection with that, everything else that is going well, you tend to ignore all of that. And so it's about how do you build this balanced life that goes across all your roles. So using that every Sunday, now I sit down half an hour, write down my different roles that I have in my life, and what I should do to further myself in all of those roles, right? I have a role as a husband, as a father, and so on. And that then keeps me grounded in terms of, you know what, work's shit, that's okay. I've got my family, I've got my, you know, anchor, and that's much bigger than work. So that's one of my biggest coping strategies. But other than that, getting into routine, you know, I wake up at 5:30 in the morning, mindfulness, physical exercise as a way of kind of dealing with your mental stress. I think that routine keeps me sane. And again, even if the workday is shit, you're starting your day, you know, you're already winning if you're kind of ticking all those boxes in it personally. So that's kind of, yeah. Sorry,
I love that, mate. And thank you for being so honest, because I think it's really refreshing to hear and kind of for you to have gone through that journey and now be out the other side. It's like you make it sound so eloquent in terms of what can be done. And like, so thank you for sharing that. Dan, I want to come to you. And something that we spoke about before, and actually someone, Dom, I think, from Bohemia asked this question in a previous session. Sort of around personal kind of identity with being related to the business. And I know we spoke about this before, and I know you sort of have gone through a journey yourself with this coming out of Dalston's. Do you want to talk about that experience?
Yeah, sure. So in my 20s, I used to play roller hockey, and I played to a high standard and lived and played in America. And when I went into the startup world, I went with the same attitude as sports into work and thought, I'm going to outwork everyone. And it became who I was. It was my identity. You know, I thought, right, I'm going to put these brands on the map. And what I found is that you burn the candle at both ends and then you end up burning out and you're not as bright as you think you are. So a huge kind of reflection as I've gone through the pandemic, come out of Dalston's. I used to be Dalston's Dan. People probably knew me as Dalston's Dan. But what I really found is that when you start to hit a roadblock or failure or challenge, is you start to reflect. When you win, you party. And when you have that challenge, you reflect. And in my reflection, I found that you've got to really find your identity and your worth, not in your job. You really got to start from a place of you are enough. Everyone is unique. Everyone has their superpower. And I think that was the big learning for me, is actually understanding whatever happens in work, loads of things can go against you. Who would have thought a pandemic would have come? I still can't believe it, that everything was shut. We lost 70% of our sales in Dalston's. I had to lay off pretty much the whole team. It was only me left with the founder trying to fight to keep it alive. And in all of that, the strength I've found now is that I'm good enough, I'm great, and not in an arrogant way, but just in a way that you can start each day and just go, whatever happens in this work, I'm going to be enough, I'm going to be great. And it's real, I think it's a comfort, I think it's a security, but more and more people should just have that kind of firm anchor in kind of self-belief and finding that strength from within.
I think it's great, and it's really good to hear sort of the coming out the other side of that and sort of really looking back because it's those ups and down moments that I guess everyone in this room, right, goes through similar, right? And I think it's being able to kind of distance yourself from that but also have enough energy to sort of know which battles to jump in and jump out again. And Lucy, congratulations on becoming a mum.
Thank you.
Amazing. I had a little one in December as well, so it's kind of like that journey of like, whoa, shit, this is like there's even less time now, eh? It was like, but no, that's fantastic. And I want to come to you around sort of Cuckoo to consulting, then into Nice. Obviously, the story around that is unbelievable. For you, as a personal journey, was what was that kind of key learning, I guess, coming out of Cuckoo and selling it, and then going on to now where you are with Nice and bringing that energy back into what you guys are doing now, which from the outside in is absolutely killing it.
Thank you. Yeah. So with Cuckoo, it's I'm always really honest about the fact that it can be quite misleading when you say you sold your company and people can automatically think that you're this millionaire with loads of money. It really wasn't like that at Cuckoo. I didn't know anything about FMCG when I set up Cuckoo. I didn't know what a category was. I didn't realize how small the Bershka Muesli category was in the UK. I probably wasn't as aware of how quickly you should pivot if your product wasn't working. So essentially, if we hadn't have sold Cuckoo, it would have essentially gone under. And when I say we sold it, it was sort of right place, right time. Didn't sell it for very much money. I personally didn't make any money from it. So a lot of people would have looked at it as a failure, and it essentially was a failed business. And I remember when it all happened, it was very emotional. I remember crying for a good 2 days. And then I do remember dusting myself off, going on holiday with my family, not looking at my email for a week, which was lovely, and drinking a lot of rosé and having a lot of fun. And I'm very fortunate in life, and I feel very grateful for the fact that I generally am a very positive person. There are so many challenges in running a business, and I really try to look at it with a lot of gratitude. When I'm going through a particularly challenging time, I try and turn to my gratitude, and I'm just really grateful for all of the things that are going right and going well. So it's been very challenging having a baby and running a company, and your time is stretched, and I have baby sick on this t-shirt under this jacket, which I didn't have time to change this morning. And when I'm going through those difficult times, like I did with Cuckoo, I would just turn to my gratitude and be very grateful for having set up a business, for all that I learned, for all of the experiences that I had. And I very much did that when Cuckoo failed, and I very much still do that today in my everyday life, because it's a real privilege being a founder. People would, you know, chop off their left arm to do what I'm doing, and I really try and remember that when I'm having a difficult time. So I hope that answers
amazing.
The question.
Yeah, no,
I can't
no,
actually remember what the question was,
but
I hope
it
that answers
does.
It.
It's great. And this is what I love about having people on the way, in this instance with you guys, but on the podcast, is we just sort of, it just becomes like an open and honest conversation. And that's kind of what we want to take from it. But I think sort of listening to all three of you, it's like taking that and sort of putting that into learnings, I guess, is around sort of having that North Star to your personal values as well, right? And being able to go, this is what really matters outside of work as well as inside of work, and that the lines are incredibly blurred, right? We've all been there, and it is what it is. Deepak, I want to come back to you. I know we spoke a little bit about sort of burnout and overwork. When you found yourself getting towards that sort of territory, what were the key signs for you, and what allowed you to sort of pull back and go, okay, this is getting a bit much?
Yeah, I think whilst, you know, I was mentioning before, I had all these external kind of signs, right? People telling me, well, we should consider your future. I think internally, for the kind of 6 months leading up to it, I knew I was getting disengaged with the business. And I had to kind of be open and honest about it with myself, right? It's not, you are angry when someone tells you that, but I think you've got to look internally and say, right, maybe there was some element of truth there. And I think there was this disengagement because as a founder, I naturally gravitate towards the first 2 or 3 years. And I remember that being the most terrifying, the hardest thing I've ever done, but also the most gratifying thing because you've got control over the outcomes. It's not a lot about influencing a lot of people in the team, and you know you can, you know, you roll up your sleeves and you get the job done. And I think that gave me a lot of, I suppose, a sense of accomplishment, a sense of achievement. Which, as you grow, I mean, we were 100 people in 2021, that you don't have the same amount of control and influence as you do when you're doing your whole thing. So it's a lot about, you don't do the stuff, you influence people. And also, as I was mentioning, because the business had slowed down considerably, it was a lot about firefighting, how do we preserve cash, how do we raise investment, things that don't interest me that much. As much as starting something newest, going and finding suppliers, going and hustling. And I'm a hustler. I'm not an operator. That's something I've told myself from God. That's just who I am. That's my strength. So I think at that point in time, I knew I was disengaged, and I started reading, the 12 stages of burnout, right? And when you're disengaged with your business, when you don't wake up. When I used to, the first 3 years of my business, I used to wake up Monday morning, right, raring to go, problems to solve, but I'm there, right? I'm solving problems, I'm getting stuff done. I think I'd reached a stage in the business where I was going, all I'm doing is we're just reporting to investors, we're trying to kind of shore up the P&L. It doesn't excite me, right? It doesn't excite me as much as creating something new, which is where I had an honest chat with my co-founder to say, look, I'm all about new business development, and that's just who I am. I can't do the operating bit. And so I think it took me a good amount of time, which meant going to a therapist, joining things like Toastmasters, trying risky things like bouldering and things like that. But it's just that's when I suppose the disengagement is when you know internally there's something wrong.
Yeah, amazing. And I think just on that, like I remember you saying before, like you used to go down and like initially in the very early days of Oddbox, right, you'd go see the farmers, you'd go see the growers.
Exactly, yeah.
And so then going through a set of P&Ls and raising money when the business has scaled is completely different job, right?
I was feeling like I was going back to investment banking, dealing with financiers, whereas with growers, you just have a chat and there's nothing at the end of that chat. It's like you're just having a genuine connection with that person beyond there's something in it, what's in it, right, kind of a thing. So I think that connection was something I really appreciated in the early days.
Amazing. Yeah. And Dan, I want to come back to you and talk a little bit around kind of culture, because you've got the most amazing experience where you sort of tearing around London in a P&J smoothie car to then obviously cause some press when we were all in like different sort of rhubarb. I remember driving a rhubarb branded Mini, and now at the number one best selling chocolate bar in the UK certainly, but I'm sure we'll grow from that. Talk me through the kind of differences in small businesses to larger businesses and the different kind of, I guess, culture that comes with that and how you as a person have kind of navigated, because they're like really completely different working environments.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I've been fortunate to have this interesting career in small, medium, large businesses, and there's great stuff in both. I think sometimes when you're in a small business, you think, oh, the big business is bureaucratic and it's rubbish, and big business will say, we're massive and these guys are tiny, who are they, until they become like a brew dog. But there's definitely some great things. What I love about the big companies is the professionalism. I think sometimes in the startup world, there's too much emotion going on. There's too much knee-jerk reaction. And people don't regulate their emotions. And they think, I'm going to say it how it is. And I think actually coming to work and being that kind of professional, keeping your attitude smart. So when you're in a big business, you're kind of very narrow and deep. You're an expert. And then when you're in a startup, you're shallow and wide. You have to do many, many things. So you're naturally more stressed. But I find that if you can take that kind of emotional regulation into a startup and you can say, right, how do I get to an 8 out of 10 and above in my personal attitude? You're going to bring out the best. We talk about bringing out everyone has their great qualities. When you're stressed, everyone is awful to be around. So, trying to bring that into your chaotic world, to bring that emotional regulation, is fantastic. The other side to big business, which is phenomenal, is all of the analytics, the P&Ls, the data. Now, admittedly, it can go too far, but bringing some of those professional elements of knowing what your margin is, not doing a promotion if you're going to lose money, knowing your cash flow and when you're going to run out of money, knowing how to present to customers, bringing in compelling joint business plans, some fantastic insights. But what I would say is you want the light version. The heavy decks, we've been in Cadbury, there would be a slide deck, that would be 120 slides presenting to a grocer. You could do that in 10 slides. What I've found is sometimes startups can be like a wilderness, and sometimes corporates can be a zoo. And ultimately what you're trying to do is get that safari, and that's when you get the winning combination is when you get the best of both worlds. And you find that when you get people that have been in a corporate world and they come into a startup and then they've got that personality and that DNA and that hunter mentality and that get roll your sleeves up, it's a potent force. It's kind of taking learnings from all these worlds and just understanding nothing's really bad. There are bad stuff in it, but there's a load of great stuff. And I think that's what we're trying to do, is unearth all the nuggets to make every business as successful as it possibly can.
Yeah, amazing. Love it. And I think the safari is such a good analogy. Lucy, I'm going to come to you really quickly, because we can't have you on a panel and not talk about direct feedback. Like, you guys speak about it a lot. Like, I've heard it on various podcasts on you speaking. We had Jeremy on a couple of months ago on the podcast, and he spoke about it there as well. But I want to make sure that our listeners at home and these guys as well get the chance to sort of hear how that comes about, because I think it's amazing and really refreshing.
Yeah, so Jeremy and I have very much built a values and mantras-led business. So we've got five core values and mantras that we live by at NICE, and I don't have time to go into all of them today, but just to give a couple of examples. One of them is to be a dog, which means to do things incredibly quickly because that's one of our super strengths over, you know, big, slower businesses. Another one is to lead and not follow, which is all about doing things differently to stand out from the crowd. And probably the one that our team love the most, I'm looking at my team and they're smiling, is direct feedback is our love language. And it probably came about because Jeremy and I went into business together. We didn't really know each other very well. And giving feedback and telling someone they've got something in their tooth or they did something that they didn't maybe agree with can be really uncomfortable, especially if you don't know someone. It's really easy to do it to your brother or your sister or your husband, but it's really difficult to do it if you don't know somebody. So I think probably Jeremy and I sort of skirted around it and would give each other feedback in a really English, polite way. And then I think it was me one day, he did something in a meeting that just really pissed me off. And I went home, I went to bed, and then I met him for breakfast the next day and I said, look, you did this in a meeting and it really annoyed me and it made me feel like this. And by the way, I think we just need to have a relationship with each other where we just say anything we want to each other. We need to be like brother and sister. We're not afraid to skirt around the topic because I was scared to say this to you and I'm scared to say it now. Let's just get everything out in the open and be really direct. And that's where one of our values around direct feedback is our love language came about. And so in our business, it's a really sort of core part of everything we do. It's in everyone's, you know, personal plans. People are marked on how well they're doing it. Within your first week at NICE, you have to give feedback as to how we could run the company better. And what I'm really proud of at NICE is that we've built a culture where an intern or a new employee or someone that really hasn't been in the industry for very long has the confidence to come up to me as the founder and say, Lucy, I don't think that you did that very well, and I think it could have been better if you'd done this. And it's really important at NICE that you don't sort of hold feedback back and you don't in 6 months' time say, oh, you did that thing 6 months ago. You have to be really encouraged to do it there and then in the moment, and it can be uncomfortable. So we do lots of things which make people more comfortable with giving and receiving it. And it's a journey, and not everyone that joins the company is really good at it immediately because it doesn't come so naturally, but we will work and help people to become really comfortable with giving and receiving it.
I think, yeah, I love it. And I think every time you speak about it, I think it's great because I think as founders as well, like you guys all know, it's like sometimes it's super hard to give that honest feedback. And that could be like to your team, that could be to a supplier, that could be to a customer. And then you end up doing something that you don't really want to do because you're sort of like almost afraid. Whereas actually, if you just rip the Band-Aid off and do it, it's... you're kind of helping anyone, and everyone. I love the sort of, is there something on your teeth? Because it just explains it so well. It's like,
because it's really awkward to say, right? If you had it in your teeth, right? If you had some crunch it in your teeth right now, I'd be like, oh my god, he's got something in his teeth. Should I tell him? Should I not? Yeah. And it's much better that you know, right?
I know, right? Because you don't want to walk around with crunch it in your teeth. It's great, but we can say crunch it a couple more times if you want.
Be a good advertiser.
I want to make sure that we get to questions. Has anyone got any questions for these? Here we go. Yes.
Oh, hi there.
You get to ask your boss a question live and direct. Is this direct feedback for performance today?
Well, can you hear me? This may shock Lucy, but I don't actually like the sound of my own voice. No, it was actually to Dan. You mentioned about emotional regulation, and that it's not always an easy thing for a lot of people. I'm quite a heart on my sleeve kind of guy. So what would be your sort of tips and tricks to trying to sort of take that step away and do that, be able to successfully regulate said emotions?
Yeah, I love analogies. You'll probably come to know this, but you've got to give a shit less. So you've got to get the right balance of like passion, but not going over the top. So some people are, it's like when you're holding sand, you hold it too tight, it will fall through. If you hold it too loose, it will fall out. You've got to have that balance and poise. And I find that in work, if you're all out, which we are, we're passionate, we're conscientious, we want to do the best, but that can lead into you just kind of, you know, overworking, burnout, and it's learning to know, just go, right, I don't give a shit, I'm switching off, and go and do what makes you happy. Like, Who Stole Your Mojo is something I read. You know, I've got two kids, 8 and 5, and you become, you know, just workaholic, you're just doing, you're going through the run of the mill with your kids, and you just lose who you are. And you've got to get that spark back. And you've got to find out what is it in life that gives you that spark. And you've got to make time for that, even if it's a little slither of that time. So my thing, I found mountain biking, you know, running, doing football, just doing things that make you who you are, and carve out that time. And then that will really help. I think that kind of, you know, the exercise, the socializing, the healthiness, all that kind of element. So just kind of get that in as a foundation. And I love the analogy of if an airplane's going down, you have to put the oxygen mask on you first before you put it on other people. And you really have got to look after yourself so that you then bring yourself, your best self, your 8 out of 10 or more, to work. And then that will help you regulate your emotion.
Love it. Any other questions? Yes. I've just lost that.
It's been a great podcast so far, Harry. Lucy, this is for you. I've been notoriously bad at giving direct feedback, and yeah, I know it's something that I've got to work on. You said that you kind of do have some things that you do with your team to help them. Can you give us one practical example?
Yeah, of course. So whenever anyone joins NICE, we take our onboarding really seriously. So there's an 100-page handbook, which gives people a real insight into how we operate as a business. And our values and mantras are really well explained. So in there, on the direct feedback piece, we explain what direct feedback is, what the purpose of it is. We also have a note saying it can be really uncomfortable. We do the tooth analogy thing. Then we have lots of examples around how you give feedback, how different people in the team might receive it, how different people might want to receive it. We have examples of good feedback. We have examples of bad feedback. We have a note on not being defensive when you do receive feedback, because that's a natural human instinct. So that's just one of the things. And then the second thing is, every employee after their first or second week has to sit down with Jeremy and I and give us feedback on what they've observed in the business and what could be done better. So that immediately gets people comfortable with giving feedback to the founders. It's then within everyone's personal plans. They're marked on how well they're living our values and mantras. So if it comes to your review and you haven't done so well on the feedback, that would be something that you would be working on with your line manager. Have I missed any of the other main things? I think those are probably the main things. It's on our office wall, a massive poster saying direct feedback is our love language. Also, we're quite open about giving it in front of each other, aren't we? So I would say, Sophie, oh, direct feedback. We always say direct feedback. We put our hand up. It kind of makes it a bit more, you know, you're preparing someone that you're going to give feedback, and we'll just say it in front of each other, won't we? We're just really open about it. So hopefully those are just a few things. Also, sorry, just to add one, just having that really uncomfortable chat like I did with Jeremy. I was like, I'm going to say something and I feel really uncomfortable and you're going to feel really uncomfortable, and we just have to get over that. And just kind of being really honest like that, I think that's what helped us with the breakthrough.
Does that answer the question? Amazing. I love just one thing that I picked up there as well, is like when you say direct feedback before you give the feedback, it almost gives you... like it's kind of like it's okay for what I'm going
to
say.
Yeah, I'm about to say something uncomfortable. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, that's so good. I love it. Yes.
Hi. You've talked quite a lot about your own mental health. Any tips on what you do to try and support your employees' mental health? And have you? I've read quite a lot about the kind of benefits of the 4-day work week, and how apparently it doesn't affect productivity, or if it does, it makes you more productive. Have any of you trialed that at all? Any experience there?
Great question. Deepak, do you want to go with that one first?
Yeah, so we do get questions every couple of weeks. We have an Ask a CEO Anything question, and that's the question that keeps getting repeated. Can we do a 4-day work week and get paid more? But I think, no, seriously, I think we are a 7-day operation as a business, and for us to do a 4-day work week at this point in time gets really quite impractical, just in terms of costs and how we have to manage that. So I think we are, the message we land with people is that it's something we are open to, but I think right now probably it's not the best possible time for the business, and just being transparent with them about it. In terms of the support that we offer to our staff, so we have, we did a mental health kind of first aid kind of a course where we've appointed mental health first aiders. I'm one of the champions, where we've got almost like a, you know, if you had any problems, you would approach HR, but if you had any mental health problems, you would kind of approach one of us, and then we kind of find a route for you. We also have non-sickness days, so we could take any amount of days that if you need a break in your kind of work week, then we allow people unlimited non-sickness days a year, and then we follow up anybody who's taken a non-sickness day, we follow up each of those kind of things with the HR people person follows up to understand if everything's okay, do they need additional support, and so on. And then finally, through Perkbox, we also have a 24/7 kind of a helpline that people can use at any given point in time. But clearly, there's more to be done in terms of supporting employees' mental health.
Just interjecting on that, there's an amazing guy called Harry Corrin, who has set up an organisation where he goes in and trains teams in mental health, and his journey is unbelievable. We had him on the podcast November last year when we did something around for November, and he speaks really eloquently about how you sort of start to implement that into your team. So definitely worth reaching out to, because he's just... Hi all, just quickly, I want to introduce you to my friends at Spring & Tonic PR, who are also this series podcast sponsors. They are my own trusted PR partners for the Sabres. What I love about Spring & Tonic is it's run by two wonderful ladies, Emily and Jess. They're a small but mighty team. It is just the two of them, and thanks to years in the industry, they completely understand the startup, scale-up, food and drink space, and how to get meaningful cut-through in consumer and trade media. Having worked with some of the most successful and exciting names in food and drink, they really are an industry go-to. So if you're looking to make tangible difference to your business, build your brand equity through PR, I honestly would look no further. Get in touch with them at Spring & Tonic PR to find out more. Ta!
Lucy, I want to throw that out to you as well, because I feel like you'll have a good opinion on that.
Yeah, sure. So we don't have a four-day working week because, honestly, our team love NICE so much and are so hardworking, I don't think they'd actually want that. But we do finish at 4 o'clock on a Friday. We used to do that in the summer and we've extended it, and it's actually really fantastic because we come in, we work really hard, we finish at four, and that means you can get to Manchester for your weekend in good time. So that's something that's absolutely here to stay. In terms of mental health support, I'm sure that there's also more that we could be doing. I think as founders, we call ourselves a human first company. So we're very open as founders, we're very approachable. When people in the team have had challenges around things going on at home or mental health, they have always come and often spoken to me, and I've helped them individually with a path to get to a sort of greener grass there. There was something else I was going to say, and I've got that thing where I've
lost my train of thought.
It's come back to me. We're a human first company, so we don't have set rules like other companies have. So, you know, if someone has a family bereavement, we don't have you can be away from the company for 2 weeks and then you have to come back. You can be away from the company for as long as you need, because different human beings will take different amounts of time to digest a massive thing like losing a family member. And so we'd really looked, and that's happened in our company a number of times, and we've really looked to support that individual with a plan that's completely bespoke to them and completely right. But, you know, I've looked into doing the mental health workshop with Harry and lots of other things, and I know that there's more we could be doing, and it's definitely on my really long list of things. But as a startup, you know, you've got to prioritize, and there's so much going on. But it is on my list.
Of course, but I think what you guys do with that human element at the forefront is addressing all of it straight head on, right? Because if people feel like they can come and speak to you and Jeremy and have those conversations, that's where it kind of starts with, right? Any more questions? Yes.
Hi, I'm Swati from Cheeky Food. Thank you. I had a question for all of you. Do you have like a life coach or a mentor who is sort of your sounding board? And if you do, how did you find them? How did you approach them?
Yeah, I mean, I've had fantastic mentors over the years, all stem from Green and Blacks. So there's guys behind that business who have been fantastic and put household names on the map. And so I was fortunate enough to have some of those guys become mentors and friends and sort of father figures to me. So that's been fantastic to have that, and some of them I still have. Then I have created great friends in the industry, other founders and directors. I set up a golf group and FMCG Shanks, which we need to play again. So we'd all get together and we'd do that. But then outside of that, I think podcasts are absolutely incredible. You know,
Harry's, we're on the podcast now, Untold, yeah. Brilliant, hungry. But if you go to America, good old gravelly voice, Tony Robbins, I find is fantastic. So yeah, that's kind of books and podcasts and all that side is what I kind of lean into.
Lucy?
Yeah, I've got a life coach therapist I've been seeing for about the last 10 years. I can't even remember how I found her. It was so long ago, but do that really regularly once a month or certainly sort of every few months. I've also had amazing mentors over the years. I mean, Dan, I swear you've mentored me at one point. I'm someone that just contacts people on LinkedIn. But most recently, what I found really useful is I've got a female group. There are five of us in the group. So I've got Pip Murray from Pip and Nut, Emma Heal from Lucky Saint, Olivia from Trip, Vivian from Little Moons, and we've got a WhatsApp group, and whenever any of us is struggling with something or needs help with something, we'll put it on the group, but then also we'll meet for breakfast or lunch sort of every couple of months. We've just planned to have a good working session on something that we're all struggling with in our business at the moment, so we'll come together, we'll share learning. So I'm all for all the podcasts and leaning on friends and great people in the industry to learn from.
Yeah, pretty much. I think I've tried several life coaches and business coaches, and I've kind of always seen after 6 months you kind of reach the end of the road with them. But I think certainly in terms of mentor, someone, Fiona Fitzpatrick, she runs a podcast called Brand Growth Heroes, and she's been helping me on the retail goods side just as a kind of a business mentor. And that's quite what I find is having someone helping you on a specific objective is quite useful than just a general life coach. But I think certainly I'm part of another entrepreneur group called ICE, it's called ICE, which is more for tech entrepreneurs. But nevertheless, it's entrepreneurs going on the same journey. And I find that peer-to-peer coaching and mentoring quite useful because you talk to people on the same journey as you are. But I think podcasts, and that's 100%. Every week I'm listening to one podcast another, just to kind of, you know, understand that you're not alone and how other people have done this before as well. So yeah,
amazing. And I think there's a key theme here that we haven't got time to go into, but I don't want to just kind of sweep over it. Is that therapy side of things and being kind of open and honest about how amazing that is in the journey of, like, in the personal journey. Like, I've been through therapy as well, and I think it's, in the UK we kind of have a stigma around it, and I think it's getting better, but sometimes it's kind of like, oh god, really, like, what was wrong? And you're like, actually, you kind of gives you that moment to just pause on life, come out of it and sort of speak about some bits and then go back in and almost course correct. So I just didn't want to kind of sweep over that bit. Unfortunately, we haven't got time for any more questions, but please do subscribe to Untold and have a little listen. There's lots of episodes like this one where we do go sort of hopefully behind the scenes. If you have enjoyed listening, we're Untold Podcast. If you haven't enjoyed listening, we're Hungry Podcast run by Dan Pope. Can we all give a massive, massive round of applause to these guys for this? Thank you so much for giving us your time and listening. I really hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed, please, please, please do download, subscribe, tell your friends' friends, tell your friend's mum's dog. It all really helps us grow the podcast, ultimately bring on more guests, which will be able to get us to give across more tangible takeaways. Thank you so much again. I'm Harry Turpin, your host, founder of The Savourists. We love you lots. Take care. Keep jingling.